first met, I was just a young skinny punk. Then I put on a voice for Uncle Frankie. You might have thought I was drunk, and I might have got you swooning when I got Sharon Moonstruck. Holly and I might have made you moony when she was dead, and I will. I was high, that's why.
Welcome to another cracking episode of your favorite Nicolas Cage podcast.
Which didn't have a new episode this week, so you are listening to this one.
How does that work?
I don't know.
Oh, I get it. I thought you meant we didn't have a new episode, so you're listening to our new episode. No, never mind. Man, if only the listeners could hear our excellent banter before the show starts about counting down and prime factorials or whatever.
Yeah. No, unfortunately... they can't, but they can listen to their third or fourth, fifth, favorite Cage podcast.
True.
Which, this is what it is.
The Good, the Pod, the Ugly. Cage on Cage.
Season 4.
Yeah. I'm Jack. We should introduce ourselves. Your main host.
Yeah, this is Thomas. This is definitely Thomas.
Whoa.
Spielberg has had many decent films, and Tom Hanks is a treasure. And this is definitely Thomas.
God.
Thomas Troy! I'm Thomas Troy!
And you are?
I'm Ken.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So the format of the show is that we've agreed to 20 different Cage movies each week, where we cover a two-movie pairing that we pitched prior and decided upon. And that results in a dwindling list of options until, wow, we get the same year, 1997.
Yeah, at the end of every episode.
On air and face off. Face slash off.
Not just the same year, but the same fucking month. Right? Weren't these released within weeks of each other?
I wasn't even alive.
Back to the pod.
So we have, we only have, we had two movies after this, Raising Arizona and Mandy. And then we are going to do kind of a wrap-up, cover-up with, I don't know what we're covering up, Willy's Wonderland. And then we're going to go over Cage's career. But I have a question for both of you, and I want a decision by the end of the episode. This is what's known in podcasting as getting people to fast forward to the ending. So,
okay,
I have two things. One is making the season a baker's dozen, so two additional episodes, and one of them would be before we do Raising Arizona and Mandy to watch Blood Simple. And what was the movie that Cosmatos made before Mandy?
Oh, Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Yes, to watch the movies the directors made before those two and have an episode where we talk about those movies.
Wait, are those both the sophomore films of...
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, okay, I didn't even realize that.
And then I have another idea. Over the course of this podcast with Nicolas Cage, not with Nicolas Cage, but about Nicolas Cage, we haven't really covered this later era of Cage. I know we have Willy's Wonderland and Mandy. There are a ton of movies he has made since Left Behind. And I think, since I kind of got you guys roped into doing Willy's Wonderland, that Jack and Thomas should pick a later era Cage film and decide what that title would be for each of you and decide by the end of the episode. And
I've already decided what it is. So.
Okay. So, I would like to do a little more about late era Cage, because as we've gone through this, it seems like there are some distinct eras.
Yeah.
And this, the one we're in right now seems to have the least amount of representation. Thomas, what do you think?
I think we should decide by the end of the podcast.
Okay. Stay tuned, podcast listeners, or fast forward to the last 10 minutes of this episode, which should be about 2.5 hours long.
Yes. Yeah, this episode should be entertaining, but longer than it needs to be.
Which is...
Wait, are you reading our Google reviews?
Do we have a preference of which film we are going to talk about first, Face Off or Con Air?
Yeah, we should probably talk about Con Air first, since it was released first and shot first.
Okay.
Cage actually went from the set wrapping in Con Air to the set of Face Off with no real downtime.
Wow.
But this would be his third film in like this kind of action star trilogy that he did, mm-hmm. with The Rock being the first.
Right.
So he wrapped with The Rock. He went to Oscar night and won for Leaving Las Vegas, which boosted his salary from $4 million per film to $6 million per film for these two films.
That's it?
And then all three of those action movies would gross over $100 million, which was kind of a record-setting thing at the time. And then Cage got a boost for City of Angels and those other fine films we've discussed, a minimum of $7 million per film.
Pretty good.
He was, as his friend at the time, Jim Carrey, said, like, Cage doesn't really like people discussing his finances. What Cage did offer, according to Nicolas Cage, Hollywood's Wildest Talent by Brian J. Robb. Thank you.
Shout out.
Multnomah County Library. The genre is lacking in character, speaking of action movies. Many of the action heroes are robotic supermen you can't really feel for, except with maybe the exception of Harrison Ford, Sean Connery, and Clint Eastwood.
Mm. Ooh.
The invincible male figure is limited, and I hope to find a different approach. Reluctant heroes, flawed convicts, action movies where the emphasis is placed on acting. And that's what we have today.
Yeah, for sure.
Jack, you weren't around in 1997. But what Nicolas Cage just said in that book was what made him so refreshing in that time period, because we have just had a decade plus of the robotic Superman, Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger. And it was so refreshing to have somebody who came from an acting background, like Nicolas Cage, a bona fide actor.
Yeah.
Doing these kinds of movies was super refreshing at the time. And it just gave these early movies, blockbuster movies, an edge that a lot of them of the era didn't have.
Yeah.
And Con Air is probably the best example of those three action movies, because everything.
Oh, Con Air, more like Con Hair.
Why?
Wait, no, I'm sorry. I'm Thomas. Still, I'm Thomas.
That wasn't Jack.
I was definitely alive when this movie came out.
I love Steven Spielberg. I love Tom Hanks.
This is a hostage video.
quick pairing of these two. Both have children's songs in them. Both have bunnies.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you have to count Buddy from season 3 of The Wire, Robert Wilson.
Yes. Well, that's a deep breath.
You want to take away that you don't ever give a convict a light, because it'll help them escape.
Yeah.
And basically, both of these films kind of merge together in my head. I'm hoping to keep them separate, but it does give me a little bit more respect for the Coke Brother movies that we saw afterwards.
Yeah.
So Con Air is produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, the first movie he made following Don Simpson and him splitting and then Don Simpson dying. I don't know which happened first.
He died. he had the option to work on this film.
But he hated the script.
He died on the toilet, right?
I don't know.
Elvis Presley style?
Yes. Yeah. my all-time favorite joke is, how do we know Elvis died on the toilet?
How?
He left a log.
Mm.
Yeah, that's okay. I don't know. I could think of a better Elvis joke, probably.
All right, well, by the end of the episode. So Jerry Bruckheimer, Scott Rosenberg, the credited writer, Jerry Bruckheimer movies are famous for having a gazillion writers working on them. And then the director, Simon West, all three of them are terrible. I hate almost everything any of these guys have done. It's just not for me. I'm a bit of a snob. But I think Con Air is a nearly perfect movie. It is a flawless example of the over-the-top, tongue-in-cheek action genre that Jerry Bruckheimer and Michael Bay and Tony Scott kind of invented during that era.
Yeah. not to jump into plot too quite yet, yeah. but I think both of them are extreme examples of just getting on to the fucking point of the movie.
Yes.
Getting straight to the action.
Yeah.
Which wasn't quite the genre at the time. Like, these are both genre-defining movies.
Yeah.
Kind of like how you get buddy cop movies starting after Lethal Weapon. I mean, they help to define what you can do with action films.
So if you haven't seen Con Air, and it's one of Cage's most popular blockbusters, so probably you have. But it starts out like Wild at Heart, except he's a soldier.
Yeah, it's literally the starting of Wild at Heart.
So
I said, if Wild at Heart's rock and roll or thrash metal, this is country.
Yeah. Well,
and that even goes to the final song, right? Because wasn't it Trisha Yearwood who did the song at the end?
I've been singing that song all morning.
Ed Mold was nominated by the Oscars and the Razzies. Both best original song and worst original song.
Oh my God.
Didn't win either.
That is a high honor, though.
Yeah, Glenn Close was nominated for the same role as a Razzie and an Oscar.
Oh, that's right.
My all-time favorite film, Hillbilly Elegy.
Right.
The worst movie of 2020.
So you mentioned that there was a writer singular, and then there's writers plural. Apparently, one of the things that stuck in John Malkovich's crawl was that they kept rewriting daily his lines and what his character was doing. Nicolas Cage, on both of these had some creative input. So the prologue scenes and the scenes featured under the opening credits, which show his character Poe serving jail time and writing his daughter, were his idea.
Oh.
So that's funny because the...
And to make him a Army Ranger was also his idea, according to Brockheimer.
Ah. Because when he is writing to his daughter in jail, it reminded me of Raising Arizona, and then the fight at the starting was very reminiscent of how Wild at Heart started.
Oh.
So it isn't.
Do you think he was just pulling from his previous film?
Yeah. I don't know, because that is really weird. Because very here's reminiscent.
Here's the other plot thing that contribution that was Nick's idea as well, aside from getting swole, was to have Rachel, and forgive me for the last name, Takaden from Total Recall, the resistance fighter in Total Recall, as the female guard. Originally was a male guard on that plane, and Nicolas Cage said, no, it probably should be a female guard.
Interesting.
Which I think works.
It does.
Totally.
It gives an added level of tension.
For sure.
And it also gives him another opportunity to prove what a great guy he is.
Yeah.
I mean, he can't just stick around to stop a rape. He has to also save the guy who is going to die because he doesn't get insulin.
I don't think it's just him. I would suggest that maybe like at the end of a Super Bowl, you know how he only trusts two people? Probably himself, and I think he's pointing that finger up to the sky.
Yeah, totally. So the Simon West, the director, basically makes us look like a Tony Scott movie. Every Jerry Bruckheimer movie, to a certain point, looks like a Tony Scott movie.
Is Tony Scott the skateboarder guy from the video games?
Yes.
Sweet.
No, he's the brother of Ridley Scott. Tony Scott jumped off a bridge.
Wait, really?
Yeah, and killed himself.
Was his full name Anthony?
That's a really good question. We will cover that on the Scott Free podcast.
Wait, is he actually Ridley Scott's?
Scotchgard.
Oh, that's good.
Was he actually Ridley Scott's brother?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that Tony Scott left all his filters in the Jerry Bruckheimer office, and then every time they shoot a movie, they go, here, make it look like these filters.
Yellow as possible.
Yeah. Cage gets beaten up after he gets home, and he kills.
Okay, well, we start off. I mean, with him being an Army Ranger,
and then right? his wife is pregnant. She's a waitress. There are some scumbags who are regulars. There's a fight
in Alabama. Nicolas Cage went to Alabama to work on that accent, and it's probably his best, most consistent accent to date. Maybe after Raising Arizona.
Yeah.
It's very reminiscent of Raising Arizona. I mean, it might
and
just
if you
be.
Went to Mobile, you know, that's only about an hour's drive away from Biloxi.
I don't know. I was a big fan of his Ukrainian accent in Lord of War. I don't know about you guys.
But that's later. Yeah. And it's so good.
So we are shown very, very definitively that one guy has a knife, but then after he smashes a guy's nose into his brain and kills him, one of the other guys takes the knife. So sadly,
but Kent,
the judge's statement of how heroic he is and what the service to the country and how unfortunate it is, very over the top.
For sure.
Well, I mean, it's why we need to have stand your ground walls, right? Because he was just defending himself. Ken, your hands are also lethal weapons, right? I think you're the karate expert of the group. As I recall, I mean, you can't just go and get into a fight. You have to restrain yourself.
Oh, no, I've had that.
Those two great 90s things I remember from the playgrounds, right? Like, one is, yeah, my hands are lethal weapons because I'm a black belt in karate. And then two, I could probably push your nose into your brain and kill you.
Classics.
Both within the first 5 minutes of this film?
Yeah. I've had judges tell me the exact same thing, by the way. True story.
For sure.
So his baby is born. I mean, his wife and the baby, they look like they could be from Utah. And the series of him writing letters to his wife, and then as his little girl gets older because he's been in jail so long, her writing him.
So fucking funny.
Hilarious.
So funny.
And then the way the prison is shot, it looks like some sort of third world country where there's barely any light.
Yeah.
And there are some riots that happen.
Yeah. And he is literally shown there's a riot going on outside, and he literally turns the other cheek and turns over in bed to not look at it.
Because he just wants to do his time and go
Yeah. on. He's a peaceful guy.
Yeah, he is.
He isn't wild at heart.
So July 14th, if you didn't know that, it is mentioned at least 50 times in this movie of when he's coming home.
Yeah. Also Independence Day in America.
July 14th in America?
Yes. I believe that's correct.
Not sure about that.
He's not very good at math. We established this.
Yeah, this is some the good, the pun, the ugly lore.
So he's going to go on a plane with a bunch of other, you know the story. And then John Cusack shows up wearing Kirk Cameron's suit from Left Behind. I don't know why these guys can't find suits that fit him.
Yeah, for sure. It's like, well, John Cusack is tiny.
No, he's not. He's my height.
Nah, he's small.
No, he's 6'4".
He's like 6'2".
No, he's like 5'2".
He's my height.
No, he's short.
Anyway. Terrible suit.
And he's a government employee. He doesn't work for the DAA. He's not flashy like that. He's like a federal marshal, right?
Sweet.
Is he?
No, he. What is his job?
I thought he was like a secretary.
Something in prisons?
I don't know. Prison guy? It's Cole Meany. Ensign O'Brien from Star Trek shows up as the
DEA
driving a car.
Cole Meany. His last name's Meany?
Yeah.
As in, like, he's a mean person?
Yeah, you know, it would suck if that was your name and you were a bully.
Yeah.
Yeah, you say he was being a meanie. And you go, yeah, that's his name.
Yeah, then you'd be bullying him. You know, if my last name was Meany, you know what I'd name my kid?
What?
Blue. It's a little Beatles reference for all you Beatles fans out there.
There, you can do the Venn diagram of Beatles fans and Good, the Pod, and the Ugly fans.
And it would be my mom in the middle.
Shout out to Jack's mom.
Yeah.
So Cole Meany has a scheme to get some information on one of the fucking prisoners, and he has a snitch or an informant. The guy is rigged up with some recording. And he's not supposed to bring a gun, and they agree not to, but then when Cole Meany pats him down before he gets on the plane, he gives him a gun to put in his ankle holster.
Yeah.
Or in his sock. I don't know how that works.
So this is definitely after Twin Peaks, right? So in Twin Peaks, Dale Cooper has a mini cassette recorder, but this guy has like a reel to reel, right? Like he's basically wearing our recording studio.
Yeah, well, it's 1997 technology.
But Twin Peaks, Dale Cooper.
Yeah.
But wasn't it transmitting? Was it transmitting? Were they able to hear them?
I don't think so. Doesn't...
No, then he'd have to have, like, an extendable antennae.
Plus, he'd have to turn it off before the plane
Yeah.
Very confusing. So the great thing about this movie is I know Jerry Bruckheimer in a year later with Armageddon kind of did the whole ensemble thing to lesser effect, but the ensemble cast in this movie is
amazing.
Pretty fantastic from
so
top to bottom.
Good.
And you get the, it's not really a freeze frame, but you get the Cusack character talking over as people are boarding or leaving the bus to board the plane.
Yeah.
So you get a little background on each one of them.
Oh, yeah.
You get a log line for each character, and it really efficient storytelling, if not obviously expositional, but it works because you got Ving Rhames, Dave Chappelle, Danny Trejo.
It's fun exposition.
And then later on, you have Steve Buscemi.
Yes.
Yeah. You get Malkovich as Cyrus the Virus.
So Malkovich was another
one. He
earned
2 degrees in prison and spent most of his life there. You have Diamond Dog, who's Ving Rhames, right? He's a black militant who wrote a book in prison. And Denzel is in the movie.
Is what
I couldn't figure out was that racist or not. I don't fully know. Maybe because of Malcolm X in 92.
I don't know. I think they probably wrote that line that day.
Out. Yeah,
and they thought it was funny.
Yeah,
and they
probably.
Kept it in.
That, okay.
Diamond Dog also being a David Bowie album, right? So that kind of makes no sense.
But here's the thing with that sort of stuff is like once you mention an actor that exists in the real world in a movie, then you start to think, wait, have any of these actors in this movie been in a movie with that actor?
Before this movie came out.
Right. But then if you go, yeah, that's a David Bowie song. Well, David Bowie was in Twin Peaks, Firewalk with Me, right?
Yeah.
And David Lynch directed Wild at Heart with Nicolas Cage. So if all that exists in this universe, is there an actor, Nicolas Cage, that looks exactly like Cameron Poe and no one mentions it? See, that's the confusion.
So, because no one looks like Cameron. No one looks like Cameron. But that hair is amazing.
Glorious
so
hair.
Good.
Maybe Jean-Claude Van Damme does in a few of his films. But other than that. Like,
oh, which we might talk about.
Which we might mention later on.
Yeah. Maybe. Possibly.
This is, I guess, Ving Rhames' third film. The one we won't be doing is Kiss of Death. That third film with Cage. And they all occurred in the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, clearly his sequence in Bringing Out the Dead is my favorite Ving Rhames of all time.
Yeah,
he is great
so
in this movie, though.
He's good. He doesn't have a lot to do. Unlike Chappelle, who's amazing. Pinball Parker.
Yeah, Chappelle basically shows up, and he is part of the escape plan hatched by Ving Rhames, Johnny Malkovich, and Dave Chappelle. They all have they've dug pins under their skin to unlock their handcuffs. They're able to escape, and then it's basically Die Hard on a plane full of convicts. That's the log line, right?
Yeah, until they land, but we'll get there at some point.
Yeah, so the when Chappelle is unlocking everybody's foot cuffs, are they called foot cuffs?
Ankle cuffs.
Ankle cuffs?
I think.
Manacles?
Then why aren't they called wrist cuffs? Why are they called handcuffs?
Yeah, what? I don't know.
Okay, shackles. I'll go with shackles.
Yes, shackles.
And then every time I see this, I'm surprised how quickly the DEA agent gets killed.
Yeah.
It's like right away. They don't fuck around with the escape plan or the DEA agent.
And I think that's one of the things that, like the next one we're going to talk about, just makes it even more of a kick-ass action film because you have the fake-out almost, right? Like you think maybe that DEA agent's going to help take down the plane and Cage is going to have to help him.
Yeah.
They might team up and there might be this whole large sequence. Or that the gun's going to be vital. Like the gun's a giveaway in another movie that somebody is a bad guy, right? Or
yeah.
A good guy. But no, he's just dumb. Like he's another undercover person on a plane. I guess we also have Left Behind, but in these two movies, you have somebody who just gets up with a gun and is like, all right, I'm going to take all of you out. I'm one person.
Yeah.
I'm an agent. Why don't we land?
So now the Colm Blue Meanie's character in the there was a scene shot where he talked about his relationship with that DEA agent, which explains why he's so intent on revenge later in the story. It was cut for probably wasn't very good. It didn't really lend anything to the story, but
right.
That was some backstory that they gave Blue Meanie. I'm always going to call him.
So there's a shootout. Some of the guards die. And during the shootout, I think Nicolas Cage's roommate in prison, who's also with him on this plane being transferred, Cameron Poe, Baby O, who's Bubba Gump.
Yeah.
In another film, is diabetic, and they've broken the needles somehow during the skirmish.
Yeah, they stepped on them.
I don't know. It'd been cooler if they used the needles to like pick the locks or something and broke them so that they, it was like even more revenge. But
you should have been in that writer's room, Thomas. That's a good idea.
Yeah, you should have been on set.
I don't think it was a room. I think it was room might be selling a little short. I think it was a writer's auditorium. I think it was
a writer's.
Yeah,
plane.
It was probably in a massage parlor, and there's probably lots of coke.
Yeah,
just guessing.
And I would have been Jack's age at the time, so it probably wouldn't have been appropriate for me to be there.
No. Okay. Hello.
So we stop.
You know what I'm always afraid of is like stepping on needles or like falling on one like in the street. I don't know about you guys, but that's kind of a fear of mine.
It's not a fear of mine.
Oh. Well, maybe it should be. You should be more careful.
I'm very careful about...
who you share needles with.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and just don't go to the street. Drive straight in. Drive straight through your garage and go straight in your little castle house, or one of your mini castle houses, and let the security... Don't step foot...
Thomas,
on public ground.
You forget podcast lore. I don't know how to drive.
Exactly. You have your chauffeur just drive straight in. You have somebody carry you if you have to leave the car.
Oh, like a dude from Clockwork Orange who had Darth Vader carrying him around after the...
Oh, yeah.
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 Or get yourself... I mean, I guess you'd have to shrink a little bit, or maybe use John Cusack, who's really tall, and do a little Master Blaster.
Yes. I don't know. John Cusack is shorter than me.
He's not.
Yes, he is.
He's a tall guy.
No, he's not. I've yet to see proof.
Okay.
Why is the suit so big?
Well,
it was. He borrowed it from David Byrne.
Yeah. So, actually, podcast lore: Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
Yes.
Starring John Cusack.
Yes.
Kevin Spacey sizes him up. Says, "What are you, a 44 long?" And Cusack says, yes, that's the exact same size
eyewear.
So, tall guy.
I could have just looked it up, but that was proof.
A little Cusack corner here. 97 was a busy year for him. He did this film. He starred in a film called Chicago Cab, small role, with Gillian Anderson. It was originally a play called Hell Cab in the 80s. They made it into a movie for some reason. He was in Con Air. He was also in Gross Point Blank. So he was in four films this year.
Wow. Huh.
One of which he's the main character in, and the other ones he's a pretty large role.
And we're still a couple years away from my favorite John Cusack movie, High Fidelity.
Midnight. Oh.
No, that's this year. What's your favorite Cusack movie?
High Fidelity.
Oh.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, but he won't talk about this film. I don't know what happened on it, but he had a worse experience than...
Malkovich.
Malkovich, yeah.
So was Malkovich's, like, really, like, eccentric, annoyed terrorist performance just based on, like, the really bad time he was having filming it?
You know, it actually makes sense, because he just seems annoyed the entire time.
He seems... Like, I would be scared to talk to
him
if I was, like...
Are you going to bust out your Malkovich?
What?
Are you going to bust out your Malkovich impersonation?
I don't know. It's not very good. We are on the plane! I'm John Malkovich!
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's the only reason I did this podcast. We're done.
That's actually why we started this podcast in the first place.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you want to keep doing your impressions? Also up for this role, Gary Oldman. Let's hear your Gary Oldman.
Oh, Gary Oldman? I'm Winston Churchill. I don't know. I can't do a British accent.
Yeah, that was terrible.
Ed Harris? Okay, I can do an Ed Harris.
Yeah, he was also...
I'm in The Truman Show. He's from The Truman Show, right?
He was also in The Abyss.
Was he?
Yeah.
Ooh. Is that... No, that's not Spielberg. That's James Cameron.
Yeah.
Cameron Poe. It's all connected.
Whoa.
Let's get back to the plot.
Oh, okay, so Cage stops a rape from, what's Danny Trejo's name? Something 23? Johnny 23?
Johnny 23. It would have been Johnny 600 if they knew the truth.
Yeah. Rapist and Rachel Tocotten. I don't know how her last name's spelled. I apologize. Cameron Poe stops it from happening. And then under some pretext of why they shouldn't, like he's part of the gang, John Malkovich says, oh, I like the cut of this guy's jib.
Yeah.
And for a while, he kind of leans on Poe a little bit as somebody that is part of his team. Team Malkovich.
Because what Poe does, I think, in this movie that is really smart at this point is he is not acting like some of the other criminals on the plane are acting crazy and like, you know, like it's party time, like we're busting out. Poe is really subdued. And I think the annoyed presence of Cyrus the Virus, he just wants it to be a little bit calmer to enact the plan, you know?
Yeah.
He seems really annoyed at everyone else besides Poe. And I think that was really smart of his character.
Yeah. They're going to Carson City, which we are told about a million times. And there's a dust storm, Frank, luckily for everybody, so they have to cover their faces. There's some convoluted prisoner swap thing going on.
Yeah, I don't understand that scene
manifest,
at all.
The manifest is something like there's supposed to be two guards going off and three prisoners. The prisoners are all supposed to be Caucasian. So originally, Cameron Poe, a.k.a. Cage, is going to get off with Bubba Gump, Baby O, and because he's going into he needs his
insulin,
diabetes medicine. They say, oh, sorry, Bubba, you're not the right color. You're going to stay on. And so Cameron Poe also stays on.
As we learn in the starting, as an Army Ranger, never leave a man behind.
Yes.
So we were set up for this in the first 30 seconds of this movie. But the whole thing is convoluted, but there's apparently Malkovich's plan has to do with some drug dealer that's getting on the plane, and the whole escape thing was them getting paid to get him out. I don't know.
And I think they're all going, right? I mean, it's not like Dog Day Afternoon where they're going to go to Wyoming or something.
Is that where they went?
Sal just doesn't know where Wyoming is. He thinks it's a foreign country in the movie. But yeah, they're trying to go to Latin America, some narco state.
Yeah, a very smart move. The transponder is removed by Malkovich, and Dave Chappelle goes and puts it on a tourist plane. So later on, Blue Meanie is, and a bunch of helicopters are tracking down the wrong plane. And then, what's his face? John Cusack, the only one that knows where it's really going, et cetera, yep. Et cetera. This is when Steve Buscemi shows up doing. As Hannibal Lecter. They don't even try to, like.
No.
They're not covering anything up. It's completely obvious who he's supposed to be. Buscemi's great. Chappelle is talking up a young lady in the airport and does not get on the plane in time. And that's pretty much the end of his role.
Yeah, they kick his character out pretty much.
Pinball gets stuck on a bumper. I hate when that happens.
Podcast lore. You, famously, huge pinball expert fan.
Not expert.
Expert.
Enthusiast.
Player. Enthusiast.
Yeah.
You're like a sommelier, but for pinball.
All right.
Yeah.
I like that.
Pinballier.
Anyway. Virus. Where? Okay. Oh,
Catch you back up to speed. Yeah, we're talking about Buscemi.
And then Cusack goes to Cyrus the Virus's cell, and then they find a bunch of plans. And this is when Cusack starts to put together that something's wrong with the plane. Blue Meanie goes off on the wrong course. And then, hilariously, Cyrus leaves a box that says, do not open, when Cusack is not in the room. And one of the guards opens it.
Kaboom. Yeah. Little Breaking Bad season 4 finale moment.
Literally warned them not to open it, and he opened it. So, I don't know.
Wouldn't it make more sense just to have the bomb there to blow up all this stuff from the start?
Yeah.
Like, why?
Or just destroy all the stuff before he even left.
Like flush it down the toilet, maybe, or something? Like,
Yeah, or you could eat little pieces of it, or crumble it into dust and then drop it in the yard like they did in Escape from Alcatraz.
Yeah.
Through your pant leg.
Yep. Yeah. So this is when one thing Cole Meany is, I think he's Irish or Scottish. His pronunciation of the word murder cracks me up because he pronounces it mortar. He does it a number of times, and I don't know if he can't, because he does a fairly good American accent.
I had no idea he was Scottish.
But every time he says mortar,
wow.
Great.
That's so great.
I wish I had a t-shirt that just said mortar.
Well, people would think you're talking about the place from Lord of the Rings.
Oh, that's Mordor.
The Shire.
So the ponytail drug guy is why they're doing the escape.
Is it? Don't they get a dude to fly the plane too?
Yeah, a guy gets on the plane.
Swamp thing.
Swamp man. Swamp thing.
Yeah.
Swamp
buddy.
Thing, I think.
Swamp guy. So he has an accent, obviously.
Yep.
And then they also get a gay fella who is not aged.
Sally can't dance.
Not aged very well. That whole plot line.
No.
Hey, it's 1997.
I don't know. I mean, at least they're not. They just let her do what she wants to do, right?
And she's part of the plan too. She's part of the team. So yeah, maybe it wasn't that bad. There are lots of low angles in this movie. Do you notice how many low angles there are for no purpose whatsoever, except that it's vaguely stylish?
No, but I did notice, I think one of less convincing fight scenes, they're losing, Swamp Thing's flying them away, and they're trying to figure out why they're not getting as much, they're getting the fuel efficiency they're expecting, and there's something wrong with the landing gear.
Yeah, that's where they find Pinball.
Yeah, that's where they find Dave Chappelle Pinball. And so Cage writes a note on the corpse's shirt while he's down there with another prisoner. And pushes him down to leave a note. But then they have this fight scene, him and that other prisoner who went down with him to watch him.
Yeah.
And they're crouched down. It's like fighting in an attic, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that scene is terrible.
Yeah.
It's really funny, though.
Because they're crouched down, but there's just no... They're not using the... And Ken, I'm going to have to defer to your martial arts expertise here, but the fighting style that the Israeli Special Forces uses.
Uh-huh.
That they use in all the Mission Impossible movies, where you fight with your elbows and your knees, and it's really compact.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's almost like those sumo wrestling suits where people fight, but in a confined space.
Yeah,
it reminds me of in Mortal Kombat when you and your friend are playing and you both crouch down and are kicking at each other, but mm-hmm. no one's hitting each other. That's what it looked like.
Some of my research for this was watching John Travolta's follow-up to Face Off, and then director of Con Air, Simon West's follow-up, General's Daughter, that came out a year after this.
And it was much better.
One of the worst movies of the era. It is so bad, it is actually funny. Some of it is offensive. John Travolta, we'll talk about him a little bit. But Simon West is not a good director, this movie is so weird. All the disparate parts that should have been terrible, but somehow it's that weird.
It's outcome. Really well directed. It's really fast paced, and besides, some of the weird crouching stuff, there's lots of tension, and the fight scenes are really good.
No, it's great.
It's a great movie.
Lots of low angles.
Maybe
it's before he fights dude in the attic. That's the first joke about the bunny, because the guy has the bunny and Poe tells him to put the bunny down.
The lotion in the basket.
Yep.
So, Cage has bought a bunny from the commissary of prison for his daughter. I'm not sure what other prisoners buy bunnies for in prison. That they would be in the commissary, but that's Cage's present. He's going to bring his daughter. And so, he has that line about putting the bunny back in the box.
And Malkovich has a great line later on that we'll get to. So they are going to switch planes. They land at an airfield graveyard. Somehow Dave Chappelle's body, pushed from the wheel well of the plane, lands on a car, and the shirt is somehow legible, which, let's be honest, he would have been splattered like Brendan Gleeson in Bruges.
Yeah.
It would have been very ugly. But yeah. This is a cartoon world, and you just kind of go with it that a Sharpie on a white shirt would not be completely obliterated
survive falling
from 10,000 feet.
Yeah, because I guess his original, he originally like recorded something on that reel to reel, right? Or he wrote something down on the agent, but then that guy, yeah, that didn't come about. So like Bobby Briggs's dad from Twin Peaks, that colonel who's
yes.
part of the UFO stuff.
Yeah, Colonel.
Yeah, it's his car that gets destroyed by.
Oh, that's right.
Falling from the sky.
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot that was him.
Yeah, and then he gets out and says, "Is this from the Black Lodge?"
And then he looks at the camera and winks.
So this would have been a great pairing with Left Behind.
Cages
because
on
when
flame.
The plane lands in the airfield, it stops inches from a giant propane tank. Not
right?
unlike the ending of Left Behind.
It's crazy.
Exactly the same. Not exactly the
and
same.
And the other crazy thing is later on, I guess we get a little bit more CGI, less practical. It's like 15 years between those two films. Like you didn't have iPhones at the time of this movie, right? You didn't have Google even. You were still pretty much on dial-up using your Prodigy, right, account. And the CGI looks better.
Yeah.
Than it does in Left Behind.
It certainly does. It still doesn't look great in some places, but it looks a lot better.
Uh-huh. So when they land at the field, this is when Cage has an opportunity to find a needle for insulin guy.
Yeah.
And then there's some tomfoolery with the plane that the drug dealer is going to take off on. And there's
Kuzak shows up. Sally Can't Dance gets a dress.
A lot of stuff going on. And then
it's our first time really off of a plane with all the convicts, right?
Yeah.
You have Garland Green, the Marietta Mangler, the Bashimi character, able to find a young lady.
Yeah. Very
much, I mean, a little girl.
Yeah. Very, very creepy scene. And they make great pains to show that he did not kill her.
Right. I think that's probably the part of the movie that works the least for me is his character. Because I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you took his character and he's a great character and it's a great performance from Buscemi, but if you took all that stuff out, would it really make that much of a difference? And I don't really buy it.
It'd make no difference. There's no difference.
And it's when his crimes are recounted, they sound legitimately horrifying. And then
yeah.
he says he wore someone's head as a hat.
Didn't he kill like 30 people up and down the East Coast or something?
Yeah, but then we kind of are supposed to like him and think it's funny at the end when he escapes.
Yeah, like he finds some sort of redemption just by like talking to this little girl
and
for
not
5
killing
minutes.
Her and not killing
and
her.
Singing, he has the whole world in his hands.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, sung from the mouth of someone who's like a legitimately awful serial killer. That's a little disturbing.
Well, okay. Okay. But also this little girl looks like she's from somewhere between Mad Max and the Road Warrior. She's in a pool, empty pool, having tea with a doll and
no parents around.
Where are her parents? Yeah.
Does like she live there in that junkyard in the middle of the desert?
Is it a Joe situation where she's just like her parents are holed up and also the junkyard next to the airplane field where something just crashed, right? Like no one's running out going, oh, is our child all right?
Right.
There's just no one around. So he like, it's a little bit almost child abandonment that he doesn't take that child with him.
Yeah.
Or try and do something for her.
You know what? Theory. I think the guy who saw the plane crash or whatever and then runs off, and he's still running away when it's taking off. Maybe that was her dad.
Hmm.
But then also that dude was like, I need to save my own life.
Well, there's also the guy that runs the thing that has been hiding under a truck apparently the entire time.
He really needs to pee, yeah.
And it's not that complicated, buddy. I mean, if you really have to pee, you can find a way.
Yeah.
I mean, you just turn over a little bit. And anyway, I don't want to get the logistics of hiding from
well, you'd
bad
have to
guys.
Find, like, if the ground is slanted a little bit, you'd have to get at an angle to where the pee isn't running back towards you.
Oh, because that would suck.
Yeah, because then you'd be covered in pee anyway. You might as well just have peed yourself.
Huh. So
that's kind of the most complicated part of the movie logistics.
Yes, that's this. That we'll cover it more in our new podcast, The Good, the Peed,
the Ugly. I thought it was You're in Luck.
But... You're in Trouble?
Ooh. So during all this time, Malkovich's character suspects there might be, it's a little too convenient that, that they've been found out these multiple times. Vin Rames is doing his recon and notices that there are people coming. They're about 10 to 12 minutes out.
Yep. You can almost hear the military drum music.
So they men take off their tops. They're all ripped.
Yep.
Prison. Except for Buscemi and Sally Can't Dance, probably. And they pull the plane while Rames, the black nationalist, whips them.
Yeah. That whole scene with them pulling out the plane. And
so fucking funny.
And it's amazing. They set up some bombs, and Malkovich puts together like a two-scale map of like their strategy. And that's 10 minutes.
Yeah, yep. It's a bunch of business. It's funny, but it doesn't really make any sense.
It's amazing.
It's fun.
So Cusack at this point has taken Blue Meanie's beloved car, and that's how he got so quickly to the airfield.
Mm-hmm.
It's his beloved car, so you know something bad's going to happen to it fairly soon.
If he is Irish, I could tell you what that something bad might be. To happen to a car in Ireland.
All right. Well, this is a funny movie. We don't want to go down the troubles.
Okay. Sorry. If any IRA members are listening to this, I support you. Keep doing what you're doing. And if any British Secret Service is listening to this, I support you. Love what you're doing. God save the Queen.
This is such a busy sequence of all this, the heavy lifting for plot and having characters separate. Blue Meanie finding the private plane,
yeah.
The tourist plane in the Grand Canyon or wherever, and then coming back.
And then
there's like the military dudes, like the cops coming in, and then they're setting up a gauntlet, and then there's the drug guy who we thought all of. The people that were waiting just for him had been killed.
Yeah, aren't there like just some bad guys there?
They're going to take the drug dealer.
Right.
And then there's still a pilot in there who peeks over the window after the shootout. And then they escape and there's...
Well, yeah, Cusack and Cage figure out they're on the same team. That's where Cage delivers his line where he only trusts two people.
I'll say I'm going to save the fucking day, right?
Yeah. And then Cusack like drives some equipment, a little bit like Cage's daughter will and Left Behind to help move the plot around. I guess it doesn't it destroy the drug dealer's escape plane?
Yeah. Maybe
Malkovich blows it up, shoots it.
Yeah, and then it breaks in half.
Yeah.
Lots of busy, busy stuff. Cage finally, after looking in every location possible, finds a Walgreens to get some needles for insulin guy. And then he gets back to the plane after tying the plane to some concrete or something. I don't know. Anyway, he stops Danny Trejo from raping Rachel Ticotin again. And then he gets handcuffed.
And then they beat him up.
She beats the crap out of him. It's great.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Is that has Cage gotten shot in the arm yet?
No, that's coming right up, right?
Yeah, because doesn't Cyrus the Virus Malkovich shoot him?
Yeah, and then the whole scene with the police coming in, it's that Jerry Bruckheimer mournful music because our soldiers and police are getting shot.
Yeah.
Not really the movie for it, fellas.
Yeah. It's pretty funny.
It's pretty dumb. Decent shootout. Logistics-wise, I have no idea where anybody kind of is in relation to the plane. But there are lots of explosions, and then Cage gets to run and jump and then land under the truck with the guy who can't pee. and then he gets on the plane and beats up Danny Trejo and saves Rachel Ticotin and then gets insulin guy his insulin and then ties the plane to something and then they're going to take off and he as it's about to take off, Malkovich and Rames are shooting at the rope because they see it. And then the rope breaks and it somehow gets Blue Meanie's car. Then Blue Meanie's there, John Cusack's there, and they see the car flying in the air beneath the plane.
Oh, you get the one moment where Bubba Gump Fabio says to Cameron Poe, like, I'm starting to doubt my faith in God or something.
Yeah.
And Cage is like, I'll reinstate your faith.
Don't do that.
And yeah.
Thing with Left Behind as a pairing.
Yeah. We should do that pairing sometime, guys.
Yeah, Cage is on a plane.
Yeah.
Anyway, everything, the car falls and breaks. There's some good comedic back and forth with Blue Meanie and John Cusack. Yada, yada. They're going towards Las Vegas on the plane. There's chaos. People are shooting. Cage gets shot. They're running out of fuel. They're going towards Vegas. How did his wife is there? How did she get there? His wife and daughter?
Like, I remember there just being like one exterior shot of her getting off a helicopter.
Ah, okay.
But I don't know the logistics of it besides that.
Because earlier in the movie, Cusack talks with her.
Similar to the other film, like it seems like the film's pretty much over. And then there's another chase.
Yeah.
So they there's a lot going on. They're losing fuel. They have to land on the Las Vegas Strip on a street.
Yes.
Left behind.
So this is the part that I think the CGI is noticeably terrible, because this is not a small plane. This is a massive, massive plane. It's huge. And it's landing on the Las Vegas Strip. So it's like, there's going to be chaos. It's going to be awful. You know,
it's not that bad.
When you see it finally from the ground with the people running and the plane coming in, the plane has shrunk noticeably to at least half its size to logistically allow it to land on this street. And then once it's crashed and it's back to being like a big practical thing, it's suddenly back to the normal size.
They should have just gone the route of Left Behind and said, oh, it's this new road that hasn't opened up yet towards Las Vegas.
But then you can't get all the flashing lights and all the casino stuff with the money flying and...
So quick fact on that, guys. Originally, in an earlier draft of the script, and Jerry Bruckheimer was like, it's probably not a good idea. They were going to crash, like have the wing hit part of the Statue of Liberty and crash into the White House. and then they found out that the Sands was being demolished, and so they figured out how to crash into that instead.
Yeah, I think the White House and Statue of Liberty, we'd be veering into Police Squad territory. Yeah. Not a bad thing. I mean, the movie practically does already.
Yeah.
At this point, the movie feels like it's kind of over. You know, it's the big climax. They crash. Most of the bad guys are taken care of. Malkovich gets away. And then there's a long chase scene and fights.
Cameron Poe just happens to see John Malkovich on top of a fire truck ladder as it's speeding away, which is probably my favorite shot. There's another fantastic shot where Danny Trejo is handcuffed and he looks dead. And the police are like, well, this guy's dead. Let's take him away. And they take away his body, but his arm is left hanging there.
Very funny sight gag.
So good. Very tightrope.
Yes.
The arm.
Yeah.
At the end. That's the one in New Orleans, right?
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about then.
I actually wrote Danny Trejo arm gag. Pretty good. See?
It's funnier than back in, what was it, 84 when they did it in Come and See with the foot?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Not super pleasant.
No. there's a long, protracted chase that really... I mean, we're in the era
Cage
where...
Cage and Cusack just jump on these police motorcycles that have been set up there and are ready to go.
And look at... Yeah, and they're like, look at each other.
Yeah.
They're like nodding. All right, let's do this. Vroom, vroom.
And the...
It's like the bike chase in a Dark Place.
It is, yeah. And then they're getting sprayed with the water cannon, and the cops are getting sprayed with it, and crashing the motorcycles. It's so good.
And then he's jumping from the motorcycle to the back of the ladder.
And using it as monkey bars, and then...
Cusack is stabbing at him.
John Malkovich suddenly has, like, this, like, medieval, like, like spear halberd sort of thing, and he's trying to swing it at Cage. It's really great.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a fire department arborist, and that was like a tree cutting hook. I don't know what that was. They get in a fight. He stabs Malkovich really gross through his leg.
Ugh.
But after they crash, he is still able to run around. All right, whatever.
Hey, he's John.
At this point in the movie,
he didn't twist it. You had to, when you stab somebody in the leg, you have to twist it.
Yeah.
Yes. Which
we'll find that out soon.
Yeah, we will.
Ooh.
Somehow there's some giant weight that's smashing into the ground and his head lands in it.
Well, what happens is they're on the ladder of the fire truck goes up, right? And Malkovich is on it.
Yeah.
And then it crashes through this like mall, like bridge connecting two buildings. And Malkovich, that's not enough. Malkovich has to fly through that and then land on some sort of like conveyor belt that's just all of a sudden in the middle of Las Vegas. There's like this old like 1910 style like steel mill that is completely abandoned of people. And he's going down this conveyor belt into literally a head smashing machine that his head fits perfectly into. So bizarre.
You're expecting like Leslie Nielsen to be standing there next to somebody else to say like, my daddy died the same way.
It's great though.
Or root around under smashed head and find the penny he put there that got flattened. He said, all right. Then we have the ending of Wild at Heart, where it's Nicolas Cage and
the rabbit stuffed animal is about to go down a storm drain.
Oh, and he saves it.
Yeah.
And then it's the ending of Wild at Heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we somehow...
Or a damning statement about child care in the United States. Where a single mom has to bring her 7-year-old to a crime scene because there's no one to take care of her.
And I think the most... after everything we just mentioned with the shrinking plane and the steel mill in the middle of Las Vegas and all that ridiculous stuff, I think the most baffling creative decision in this film is certainly the last scene, the very ending.
Oh, with Steve Buscemi feeling lucky at the craps table. And then he rolls snake eyes.
Whoa. Absolutely bizarre. I have no idea why it's in there.
Only thing I can think of, and this kind of goes back to the podcast, Buscemi, You, and Everybody We Know. where... He was just hot shit at the time. He was Mapped to the Stars Eddie in Ken's favorite film, Escape from L.A., the year before. He'd been in Fargo, Desperado, Dead Man, and Billy Madison. And we probably forget that he was higher billed than Sandler in Airheads.
Oh, yeah. That, you know, you get it's a good point.
And Big Lebowski.
Right? So, yeah, and another thing,
and,
too, that...
And he had previously been with Cage as well, so maybe when Cage was going back, like, rehashing some of his old characters, he's like, you know what, we didn't really use Buscemi all that well in Xanderly, the movie that Cage did with Judge Reinhold, where basically Buscemi is a garbage man who has no reason to be in that movie either, and shows up at the end in this amazing scene where Judge Reinhold's widow is at a graveyard, like, mourning, and... Buscemi's character shows up and he goes, "What you doing?" And then proceeds to just like shoot the shit with her as she's like grieving her dead husband.
Well, if you had just made all that up, I would have had no idea.
I'm a big fan of his turn in the Miller's Crossing and Barton Fink.
Yeah,
it's the
wait. So Thomas, did you say Dead Man?
Yeah, he's on. I think he doesn't have any lines up. I think he's a bartender in Dead Man, the Jarmusch film.
Sounds about right.
I've seen that and I do not remember.
I don't remember him in Billy Madison until I started thinking about it. And he gets lipstick tips from like Lulu's mom in Wild at Heart. Like he has like this to kill people list and he marks Billy Madison off of it. And he like puts lipstick on like all over his face.
What?
it's like a 15-second scene in Billy Madison. But yeah, he would just show up and shit.
Wow,
it was great.
Huh.
He's a treasure.
We talk a little bit about Nicolas Cage's performance. I think we've already touched on at the
time. Can I give a not hot take? A pretty cold take?
Sure.
This is by somebody named, he's from the Chicago Sun-Times. It's a newspaper, so I don't know if those are still around. His name is Roger, maybe Roger Ebert. I don't know. Do you pronounce it Roger Ebert? He did not approve of Nick's turn as Cameron Poe.
What did he say?
What?
He says, Cage makes the wrong choice, I think, by playing Cameron Poe as a slow-witted Elvis type who is very, very earnest and approaches every task with tunnel vision. And then this is a comment from the book by Brian Robb. It was the first time in many years that Ebert, normally a Cage admirer, had given the star a bad review.
That is insane. I have never read a bad Cage review by Ebert. He seemed to love all his performances. That's crazy.
And I don't think it's anywhere near accurate.
Like, no, it's not.
You want kind of a, I mean, he's not a jarhead, but you want kind of a dumb hero for this film.
Well, earnest, I don't know, dumb is quite the right word, but earnest.
He's like simple. He's like Ned Stark, because a lot of people I know complain about
Game of Thrones
about Ned Stark's character and him being like stupid in spoilers for Game of Thrones in that season by getting killed immediately because he's too honest. And I think that's totally like the Cameron Poe character. Like, he totally could have played along and gotten, you know, a better deal for himself or whatever, but he's just too good. He's the good guy.
And
Cage's performance is really deep too. He really gets into that.
But that might also get into just this turn that Cage helped initiate in what you consider an action star. Mm-hmm. Because the other two people up for the role were Tom Cruise and Schwarzenegger.
Boo.
Cage actually got his body fat down to less than 3%. And he says, it was weird. At one point, Disney was worried I was getting too big and I was looking kind of scary.
Yeah.
I can imagine him saying that.
I can imagine Disney worrying about that.
That's a little bit of a humble brag as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it totally is. So the year after this, Bruckheimer and Michael Bay made Armageddon, and I think I hate Armageddon. It's one of the worst movies of the 90s. I know a lot of people love it, but Bruce Willis and Ben Affleck in that movie are just terrible. They're picking up a paycheck. There's not a lot interesting other than the personalities that they bring. There's no effort in the performances.
Right.
And comparing that to Con Air, which is just as silly. And then you have people like Nicolas Cage, John Cusack, and John Malkovich.
Yeah, does this sound like somebody who's getting a paycheck? I'm just going to do one more. West also found himself dealing with some of the remaining method acted tics. He claimed that every couple of days in between takes, Nick would begin shrieking and howling. He would take a running leap at a wall where he'd cling on, screaming until he was told to come down. Nick claimed he was keeping up his energy and relieving frustrations, but West believes the star was pretending to be Spider-Man.
What the fuck?
Robert Pattinson has that same level of craziness.
He does, yeah. And certainly.
That's what makes these guys pop in their movies, is they bring something that Bruce Willis or Ben Affleck simply don't possess.
Yeah.
And I think that makes a successful director of somebody like Cage, or sort of like in Vampire's Kiss, where they say, hey, you want a bat, a live bat? Cool. So Central Park has a lot of bats. Here's a net.
Yeah.
Come back when you're ready for nap time and we'll shoot some scenes.
So I'm a huge fan of Con Air. It's one of my favorites of the era. Thoroughly entertaining. Nicolas Cage really kind of makes the movie for me. I don't know if I would have rewatched it as many times the last 24 years, if it were just
it's an amazing ensemble cast, and it's unlike you said Armageddon, it actually works really well.
And I think that part
aside
of that is
Buscemi,
because
maybe.
Well, Cage, as we have seen in this thing, is really great in ensembles. You never feel like he's scared somebody else is going to steal the limelight in these things, and he lets other actors be what they need to be. Doesn't need necessarily the best line in every scene, mm-hmm. and understands when a scene is about another character, another actor, and letting them do what they do. I'm not sure if Ben Affleck and Bruce Willis are of that level of even thinking about that.
Of even thinking?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Good Will Hunting?
I have.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Good Con movie. Air, Google Reviews.
Okay.
Jam says, put the bunny back in the box. I said, put the bunny back in the box. Why couldn't you put the bunny back in the box? That's from the movie.
End scene.
Fresh Grilled Panini gives it 5 stars and says, now why couldn't you put the bunny back in the box? Clayton Law says, I wonder if this comment will be shown on Google. It will also be shown on The Good, The Pawn, The Ugly, Cage Uncaged.
Yes. Well, I don't know if shown is quite the right word.
Well, they do live transcripts now, so maybe.
Okay.
Connor McIntosh says, it has my name. Mitchell McGrigor says, please bring back my wife.
Aw.
It's the citizens of the internet for you.
It's Con Air, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Are we going to take a break?
Yeah, let's take a little break. For any keen-eared listeners tuning in and turning up the volume, little announcement. We do have a podcast dog in the studio with us, so if you hear copious amounts of sneezing, that is our dog rubbing his face on the floor.
I guess we should probably also talk about the other thing that happened this week. The beef that we have from releasing our last episode with the, and this is the greater than sign, the real thing. So if you think about that little Pac-Man sign, so yeah. I guess it might be like, better than the real thing, greater than, even better than the real thing. Anyway, the real thing spelled with double E's. It's a YouTube podcast, apparently. And they got mad about my mentioning of the Batman Forever stuff and the contest I wanted to launch. And I guess it's made life harder for our role manager of marketing, Patrice, with sponsorships. Because, no, just this last week, she had a bait and tackle store on the hook, pun intended. But those Irish assholes over at The Real Thing interfered, and they showed photos of our poster, or I'm sorry, of our billboard, right, with the graffiti all over it, and they got our sponsorship. They said that their name was better than our name. It was a better fit.
Wow.
So, kudos, guys. You're probably right, but still, like, not all of us live in multiple homes. Not all of us know Jeff Bezos. Some of us could use that extra cash.
Thomas, you called them Irish assholes, right?
You can just say, yeah. Irish. Is that a joke?
No. Damn it. I was going to ask if you've seen Casino.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so you know the opening scene? I'm just saying, install like one of those metal plates underneath your car seat. Be careful.
Yeah. Is that why you don't drive?
That is why I don't drive.
Any sort? That's you just police motorcycles?
Yeah, just police motorcycles.
Speaking of Slovenia, all good and fun, the jokes about the billboard and stuff. But after the episode dropped and we mentioned Slovenia, they were not happy with our, my little bit. Like most people, they didn't find it very funny. But the Slovenia Tourism and Agricultural Forecasting Committee actually reached out to me and asked about the billboard and stuff. And I said, no, it was kind of a bit, you know, it's trying to be funny.
Yeah.
Didn't think it was very funny. And it was actually Luka Doncic, the basketball player of the Dallas Mavericks, is also the head of the Tourism and Agricultural Forecasting Committee. Good for him.
Okay.
I asked what we could do to apologize on air, mea culpas, and they asked that we, or I, read the Slovenian national anthem. So I'm not going to sing it.
Wait.
So.
And translated?
It's translated. Yeah.
Okay. I was about to say we might lose some. We probably should do that at the end of the show if it was not translated. I think we'd lose some people.
Mm. It's okay. It's translated. So this is because okay. no hard feelings, Slovenia. I'm going to read the national anthem in English. Slovenia, Slovenia, oh mighty Slovenia, with your hill so green and your goat so pert, you are always in my heart, oh mighty Slovenia. Wherever I go, even to the corner store for a turnip. Turnip, turnip, oh lovely turnip, a turnip on every table, a turnip in every stable, in Slovenia. Oh mighty, glorious Slovenia, you are mighty and fair, smelling faintly of musk, our love lasts forever, from dawn till dusk. Mighty,
wow, it's mighty, crazy how that translated and still rhymes.
Slovenia. That's the Slovenian national anthem.
All right.
So, wait, can I put my hat back on?
Or is it- Everybody sit down.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about Face Off.
Yeah, wait. You didn't say that right, Ken. Sorry to be grammar police, but it's Face Slash Off.
Yeah,
and that was very important
off.
To John Woo.
Didn't want it to be a hockey movie.
Yeah. Literally, he said that because it actually is a face off, which is a dash off, if I remember right, like face dash off. It's a 1971 Canadian film that later got parodied by SCTV. John Candy made fun of it. And it was supposedly a horrible, horrible film. Not for like necessarily any moral reasons, just like not very well produced. So
yeah, I remember that at the time about the name of the movie with the slash. Very funny. Anyway, as Thomas just said, Jonathan Woo, expatriate of the great series of action movies he made in Hong Kong, 5 years into his American filmmaking experience.
Yep.
We covered this in the John Whoop There It Is, where we cover his 90s films.
Yeah, his American films, which this was the... Yeah. The second of two with Travolta and the first of two with Cage, I believe.
Second. The Rock. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's not his movie. Broken Arrow had Travolta in it.
Mm-hmm.
And where did Cage work with Woo again?
Wind Talkers.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Which I saw in a theater.
Was it good?
Opening day. No, it's not good.
John Woo, director of... one of my favorite action movies, Hard Boiled, which also probably has the best shootout of all time in it.
Hard Boiled from 1992, his last movie in Hong Kong until he went back. Yeah, one of the great action movies ever.
Yeah,
that and The Killers are just phenomenal. I watched both of them again this year. I try and watch them, you know, every couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Favorites of the whole Good, the Pod, and the Ugly crew, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh. And speaking of favorites of the podcast, did you read in the IMDb trivia that for John Woo's birthday on this film, Nicolas Cage and Dick Cassavetes gave him a Dirty Harry poster signed by Clint Eastwood?
What?
Dude.
And it was amazing. Just Clint Eastwood's birthday a few days before we record this.
No, it's tomorrow.
Oh, it's tomorrow.
Yeah, he's 91 tomorrow.
Really?
Yeah, I sent you a text earlier. We need to mention it on the podcast.
Oh, shit.
I think he's in production or pre-production of another fucking movie.
Is he?
The guy's turning 91. He just made a movie, Cry Macho.
Oh, my God. You know what? Say what you will about the guy. Still making movies. Still kicking around.
If the second he stops making movies, he will drop dead.
Yeah.
But he is a machine.
He is insane.
Anyway, we digress. Speaking of The Killer, the opening sequence with John Travolta on a carousel with a kid with possibly the worst movie haircut of any child in movie history.
That's really why Nick Cage shot him.
And Nicolas Cage, as the assassin trying to kill Travolta but accidentally killing the kid, is sporting a mustache as an homage to Chow Yun-Fat in The Killer.
Oh,
interesting.
Isn't that fascinating?
That is.
Anyway, it opens with Cage shooting Travolta.
Well, you know he's a bad guy because not just the mustache, but he takes a drink from that soda and he uses a plastic straw.
Ooh, boo.
Yeah, but he shoots the kid accidentally trying to kill Travolta's character, and then he has to go to Bruges and await further instructions.
That'd be a good movie.
That would be a good movie. Someone should make that.
So then it cuts to 6 years later. Travolta is a hilariously expositional super cop. That's like, we just run the anti-terrorism defense division in Los Angeles, and we're so secret nobody even knows who we are. Great dialogue.
Right. Yeah.
I don't have to spoil anything for somebody who doesn't know this film and maybe lives in a cave or is very young, but at some point they're going to swap faces.
Yes.
And so Cage is going to be Travolta, and Travolta is going to be Cage.
Yes.
Which means maybe this is another film in which Nicolas Cage gets an award for being a cop.
Oh.
And there's also some car stuff going on.
Yeah. I wrote that early on, that John Travolta is literally acting like he is in an episode of Seinfeld. I don't know why I wrote that, but I think it's true.
Seinfeld? What? Maybe Friends.
No. Okay, but like, you know, the side characters in Seinfeld that come on, and that's what he felt like to me.
So before we get too far in the plot, which is pretty much, as Thomas just said, they swap faces and Cage plays Travolta, Travolta plays Cage. Not too complicated of a story. Crazy high concept. There's no reason it should work. I don't think it actually does that much. No. But Cage, despite me not liking the movie, I think this is one of my favorite Cage performances we've seen. Amazing performance. Paired against Travolta, one of the worst performances by any actor we have seen on this podcast so far.
Look, I mean, that I know you don't really like Travolta. Do I have to go through the whole name of that last podcast we did?
Yes.
Travolta?
Yes.
Oh my God, guys. I can't believe you're making me do this. Okay, let me try it. It's Welcome Back, Cotter. Look Who's Talking, Saturday Night Fever, Be Cool, and Carrie Phenomenon, Fiction, Pulp, People versus OJ, Punisher, Urban Cowboy in the Plastic Bubble, Outfield Earth, A Love Song for Bobby Long, Swordfish, Ladder 49, Lucky Number, Perfect, The General's Daughter, She's So Lovely, Michael, Two of a Kind, Gotti, and Shorty in the Valley of Violence and Criminal Activities, Grease, the Mad City, Moment by Moment, Trading Paint of Primary Colors, and the Galaxies of Lonely Hearts, Wild Hogs, and Old Dogs. Plus Face Off and Broken Arrow.
Yeah, a dearly lamented podcast.
Yeah, every episode is basically just trying to read that. And this is part of the revival, right? He did four movies the year before.
Yeah, the Travolta sons.
After Pulp Fiction, he'd get Shorty, White Man's Burden, mm-hmm. and then the year before, Michael Phenomenon, Broken Arrow, and then this year, Mad City, Face Off, and She's So Lovely. So he's hot.
He is also terrible.
And John Woo thought he was hot because he said in the commentary that he wanted to dance like Travolta. It was just gushing about Saturday Night Fever. And I couldn't believe he gets to work with his idol. It was really lovely to hear.
That's amazing.
So this movie was initially written more of a futuristic story with a lot more
100 years in the future.
Yeah, with a lot more sci-fi elements. And then, correct me if I'm wrong, John Woo thought it would be better if it was set in the present tense, like the classic "this takes place tomorrow" type conceit, which I think works in the movie's favor.
Yeah, he had the script since like 92, and Michael Douglas was trying to push it. And John Woo, again, also talks really highly of Michael Douglas. He didn't say much in the commentary, but like for those two people, he's really, really has a lot to say. Likes Michael Douglas a lot, and Nick Cassavetes and Cage, of course. But yeah, originally it was supposed to be set 100 years in the future. The prison they go to, the medic boots hang them upside down, and they like get their fluids drained from that. And it was supposed to be like a sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
And we was like, how about I just make it more like one of my films and just have a heart and some acting in it? And people said, I don't really know. And he's like, I'll put some action in it too. And boy, fucking howdy, did he ever do that.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage is introduced portraying a priest putting a bomb in the convention center with the longest lead time, possibly of any ticking time clock bomb in film history. It's like hundreds of hours. It's like a 2-week lead time.
Yeah.
Really absurd, but
but he walks into the choir, he does this headbanging thing, and on the commentary, one of the writers just says, there's Nick doing his thing. I'm so disgusted.
My God.
Best part of the movie.
Best part of the movie, for
sure. Is Nicolas Cage. He carries the whole thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, this would not be a movie as legendary as it is today without Nicolas Cage's performance, because he really elevates it.
Yeah, we almost
it.
Get two for one Cage, right? Because you get, I mean, of course you get Cage as the bad guy, you get Cage as the good guy. Cage is the good guy trying to be the bad guy.
Yes.
A little bit like in Adaptation.
Yeah.
But you also get John Travolta as Nicolas Cage as best as he can.
Yeah.
And so yeah. you get a bunch of Cage.
Right.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, putting those two together though is kind of like Alabama playing a football game in August against a community college. It's really not fair.
John Travolta doing his Cage impression is the funniest thing I've ever seen.
So terrible.
It's so bad.
There's an early scene where we have Nicolas Cage's brother, who has one of the weirdest affected voices.
Donald Kaufman.
Yeah. And then there's they're trying to escape, and then there's a standoff with a Hummer and a plane that's going to take off.
Oh, yeah.
And then Travolta's playing chicken, and then they put, like, the agent. Cage puts the agent by the – how he could see her, I don't know. And then he swerves. And then it leads to probably the best action sequence, the shootout in the – when they crash the plane into the little warehouse.
Yeah.
It's really the only action scene that Wu does that feels like it's planned and choreographed. There does a weird thing in the rest of the movie where this action scenes are done almost in an abstract style.
I don't know. I'd say that the one in the apartment shootout I like a little bit better.
Yeah?
Yeah, but I think what Ken's saying is you don't get, like, the longer shots of things going on. You don't get people with all the wire foo. Like, it's a little bit more...
Like, I like that stuff, though.
Me too.
And then whenever we get in the chapel, you also don't really see who's shooting who whenever the guns go off. You just get the close-ups.
So, have you guys ever seen a film called Blue Velvet?
Blue Velvet.
There is a sequence at the end where a love letter is playing over the soundtrack, and it goes through various scenes of the police in a shootout with Dennis Hopper, Frank Booth's henchmen.
But you never see them, right?
Yeah, but the way it's shot and edited is like a montage. It's very abstract, and it's really funny and works perfectly in that movie. That's what some of Wu's action scenes reminded me of. Every shot seemed disjointed from the one before it. I had no sense of geography.
The opening one that starts a minute 11 into the film
is pretty good.
Feels like they screwed up the wheels at the theater and put the final act.
Yeah.
Right after, right? Because it's amazing. Like Ken was saying, you have a Hummer, then you have like maybe Bunny flying the helicopter, somebody's flying the helicopter, and Travolta like shoots out the engine. Yeah, they can't fly, so they crash into what must be like a jet laboratory.
With fireworks?
Yeah. Margaret Chow like punches somebody, or her stunt double does. Like it's just a bunch of fireworks all over the place. Occasionally you can see the wires, but, you know, who cares? People are flying all over the place, getting shot, sliding down stuff. Travolta somehow is an action star. I don't fully buy that, but yeah.
It's great.
So many squibs. Some dude gets his ear shot off.
Yes, and that is replaced later to give some exposition about the face swapping technology.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm not going to go over the plot too much, but Cage is supposedly dead, but it turns out he's just in a coma. But they need to know where the bomb is. So there's this technology where they could swap faces and Travolta could pretend he's Cage and get the information and stop the bomb and kill everybody.
Worst plan of all time. So stupid.
So they go to a lab.
I mean, it's not that much crazier than like a body swap movie, right? I mean, that's all it is, just with technology and the doctor being...
Doctor Exposition.
Meg Ryan's fiance.
That's who it was. Thank you.
Yeah. Comfiore, I think is how you say his name.
But he dies in this movie. How is he Meg Ryan's boyfriend 2 years later?
Dude, they swap faces. oh my goodness, fish gills. Like, of course it's not really him.
So I will admit, I besides the first set piece, which was really good, I didn't really like this movie until they switched faces. I thought it was really boring up until that point.
Well, you're talking about like a 5 second part of the film.
Well, here I fell asleep, so I don't know how much of it I missed. I think I missed Cage's character, or I mean Travolta. Travolta playing Cage, like, escaping? Like, I think I missed that part.
Yeah.
They swap. Well, then you missed Cage fighting the machine from 8mm. Yeah.
Did you not see that part in jail?
I didn't know he went to jail.
So Travolta is now Cage. They've swapped faces, and he goes to some weird jail that doesn't exist, and they wear these huge metal boots.
That it no longer doesn't exist. Like, Amnesty International doesn't know about it. Nobody knows.
Nobody.
This top secret jail exists.
The only people
and
who...
Cage has Travolta's voice because they have a microchip in his throat.
Of course.
And he repeats this line about peach. I could eat a peach for hours. And so he's going in there to convince his brother, who's always taken care of, to
tell him where the bomb is. And then Machine is there, and they get in a fight.
Okay, I was really tired when I watched this on account of my dog getting up a million times in the middle of the night. So, yeah, I missed a lot of it. I'm sorry.
I can't believe you just threw your own dog under the bus to blame for your sleeping
habits.
He's being
annoying as hell right now, so... Evidence.
Poor Watson.
He's a criminal.
So they go to the Cage goes to the prison, and he has to impress his brother to prove that he's the same guy. And it's like everybody has dialogue where they're kind of suspicious. Like, wait a second.
Yeah.
It's like if someone swapped faces with you, I wouldn't be suspicious that you were somebody else because
right.
That's impossible.
You just think I was like in a bad mood or something.
Yes. Well, yeah. Or your dog kept you up all night.
Yeah.
They also heard that he died maybe. So that could be, or maybe the curly haired dude with the glasses, who later played the Punisher, Thomas Jane. Maybe he's like, are you married to my future wife? Because he would later marry Patricia Arquette.
Ah.
Oh.
Small world, Hollywood.
Interesting.
Anywho.
Patricia Arquette was in...
Cage remembering to be Cage... Or Cage as Travolta remembering to be Cage's character is one of the delights of the movie. It's obvious what he's doing and what he's thinking, but it works.
Yeah.
It works so
it's
well.
It's a really layered performance.
There's a prison fight. Cage wakes up without a face, sees Travolta's face floating around, calls his goons. And was it... So when Cage had the makeup where his face was gone, wasn't it true that they had to remove all the mirrors on the set because he didn't want to see it?
Yes.
What? Yeah, I remember that too, because he did not want to see. I mean, who would want to?
I mean, apparently, according to Wu in the commentary, Travolta was a delight to be around. Like, he was always telling jokes and doing impressions of people. Ed Cage, though everybody liked him on set, was always kind of standoffish and always, like, focused and trying to be in his role.
You know what? Watching the movie, that's not surprising.
Yeah, which one of them gave the better performance?
Yeah, the fuck cares how nice you are on the set? I mean, as long as you're not being abusive. Don't get me wrong. But hey, you could really see Travolta's probably a fun guy to hang out with.
Oh yeah. I mean, have you heard his album?
No, I watched that, that Olivia Newton-John, John Travolta Christmas song they did about 10 years ago.
Oh yeah. That was pretty good.
I watched that video. I watch that video at least, once a year.
Wow.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's great though.
Never seen it.
So Cage now has Travolta's face, and he goes and visits Cage in prison. And Cage suddenly realizes everybody that knows who he is now dead, and that John Travolta, or Cage as Travolta, is now him. And he has access to his wife, Joan Allen, and his daughter, Dominique Swain. And he has to escape now.
Yes.
So the doctor from City of Angels got killed, and then Bunny from The Wire got killed. Not Bunny from Con Air, but the actor who played Bunny.
The Bunny from Con Air is still alive at the end of the movie.
Yes. And then that whole sequence where he comes home and Dominique Swain's there and Papa's Got a Brand New Bag is playing, and like he leers at her, which is one thing, but it's also like the camera kind of leers at her too. Really gross scene.
Yeah.
Not a good decision by John Woo to make the audience the leering eye of a sociopath.
For sure. I was asleep during that, but I agree.
Okay. And then the song is playing because for some reason his 17-year-old daughter is playing Papa's Got a Brand New Bag. And then he ends the scene by smoking a cigarette and saying, Papa's Got a Brand New Bag. It's like literally, not subtext, just no, text.
It's just text. That I also love the storyline with his goth daughter, who's like, I think they literally say out loud, it's like, you know, the dialogue is shit, like, she's just acting out because her brother died. Like, more text. That she learns to be, like, not rebellious by, like, she stops being goth. I think that's really funny. Very 90s.
When Travolta is Cage, or I'm sorry, yeah. No, Travolta, yeah, Cage as Travolta. That gets confusing. Archer. Cage is Archer. No, Travolta is Archer. Yeah, Travolta is Archer. I feel like I'm at the end of Pet Detective right now. But he heals the family. Like, it's a little weird that Joan Allen doesn't realize that the penis is different.
I don't understand how that works.
Maybe they're both eunuchs and they just give oral pleasure. I don't really know. I don't really need to go into it. But Travolta, like, brings the family back together.
It's he does. So he funny. Heals the family.
It's, yeah.
My favorite scene is the scene with the daughter and the dude in the car in the driveway. And Travolta, Cage as Travolta, who previously it's implied that he would have, like, just done nothing, I guess. But he, like, beats that guy up, right? Or, like, pulls him out of the car. And then he gives the daughter this, like, awesome, like, illegal butterfly knife and then gives her a cigarette, too.
Oh, it tells her how to use it, too.
Yeah.
You stab and twist.
You stab him in the leg.
And twist.
Turn. If only John Malkovich. Oh, never mind. The previous movie, there was a stabbing in the leg. There was only a turn. But did you like the face wipes? My wife and I have started doing that as a thing of affection. The first time she did it, I was very upset. But
and then the second time you liked it?
It grows on you. It really does. Where you take the palm of your hand, you pretty much start at the nose, and you just wipe down from their face.
Who does not like somebody touching their face?
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. It's like hands are like probably like the dirtiest thing because of like... And, like, also touching, gross. Like, every time he does it, I notice that he drags down the lips a little bit. So he's probably touching the spittle in their mouth. Oh,
gross.
It's really
nasty. I don't
know
how well he washes. And when he's
a bad guy.
When he's there's no way he washes his hand when he goes to the bathroom. He's a bad guy.
Yes. Zero chance. We know from the great the Justice League Unlimited episode, when he leaves the bathroom and the dude's like, aren't you going to wash your hands? And he says, no, I'm a bad guy. Bad guys don't wash their hands.
It's true.
I thought it was nasty. I was searching my mind for anything in cinema that's even remotely similar as like a family hidden gesture or family gesture of affection. The only thing I came up with was in Mad Max, the sign language that Mel Gibson and his wife have.
Well, I was going to say in Mad Max Fury Road, don't they, the green place people, they do that thing, the arm thing, and then they rub their faces together, right?
But that's a whole people. I'm just thinking like a family unit that has something.
Like the family in A Quiet Place. They got some shit going on. The old
or the family in The Dark Place. They do the fist bump. That's like family.
Yeah. Speaking of to break a bit here. This podcast began because of the pandemic, and Jack and I Went to see a movie in a theater for the first time since February of 2020.
And former theme song singer and former guest, Andrew.
Andy. Yeah, we saw A Quiet Place 2 in a movie theater. It was great. Anyway, so podcast days are probably numbered now that we're going to see movies. It's okay.
Speaking of numbered days, the wife has a diary. And
of course.
Travolta as Cage, or Cage as Travolta, however you want to talk about that, opens it up. And I don't know if you guys noticed the dates on it. It was September 11th.
Whoa. I did notice that.
That's wild.
Yeah. What are the odds?
Cage gets
one in 365.
You're pretending like you're not good at math.
So Cage escapes with Machine, the actor who plays Machine from 8mm. And it turns out there's some convoluted scheme where they're going to get electric shock treatment. And that's the only time they take off the boots because of electricity. I don't know.
Okay, how much of this movie did I miss?
And then that's when he escapes. He and Machine escape. Machine gets killed. And it turns out they're on an oil rig, which, okay, that's where your prison is, fine.
I have a legitimate question.
What?
I thought you meant it was another character archetype where it was like a big buff dude that wore a mask the whole time.
No, it's the actual actor who played actor. Machine.
That's fucking nuts. Okay.
You missed a lot of this movie.
I'm sorry.
From there, Cage, who is really Travolta, whatever, goes to his old gang, including Cassavetes, Punisher, Showgirls. And apparently Showgirls' kid is actually Cage's kid. And he finds out for the first time, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it gets into the more of the things where he says something and then it's like, it's not right. And they're like, wait a second. You used to eat ice cream with your left hand. And then he has to like, prison, you know, prison changes a guy.
Yeah.
And he does some drugs, but unlike the Brown in Lord of War or the Oasis scene in Bringing Out the Dead, there is no dream sequence.
Yeah, we have three movies in a row where there's a fake drug.
Yeah.
Or a real drug.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then
I really like the scene with him and the gang. That's a good sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, Cage is great. And
this is when the movie really starts picking up, and it's also when I woke up. So
yeah. And that's the point where Travolta kicks the 70s show rapist who is trying to force his daughter to do something. Very, very satisfying for that particular actor to get his ass kicked for doing something like that. Yeah, that was great. And for some reason, one of my notes here is Travolta has really hairy knuckles. I don't know if anybody else noticed that, but
How
did they do that? Because Cage doesn't. So how did the doctor like put fake hair on the knuckles?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah.
Okay.
I learned about that in seventh grade.
John Travolta's hairy knuckles.
Yeah. Yeah, he was the example that we have in the textbook. So it'd be like, it'd point to his knuckles and it would have the scientific name like in the Wile E. Coyote cartoons.
Hairiest Knuckles?
Yeah, Hairiest Knuckles.
You went to a cool school, man.
Thank you. It was a Scientology school.
Okay, so Travolta has gotten his brother out of jail. The bad guy's gotten his brother out of jail, and then they found the bomb, and now they know where Cage is holed up, and there's another shootout and attack.
Insane shootout.
Not a very well choreographed one.
No, that's
upsetting.
Good.
Upsetting. I mean, I don't live in Los Angeles, but I was just thinking about all those different guns that they have, and they have this BFG grenade launcher thing, and I'm like, they can't hit anybody with it. And I'm like, my fucking tax dollars, if you just invested a little bit of that into target practice.
Yeah.
You wouldn't need so much ammo.
Yeah,
for sure.
But instead, Cage's kid has some headphones on, and the second time we get in these films, a kid's song playing.
And that was John Woo's idea, taken from Hard Boiled, right? And he ripped himself off.
And he paid for it because the studio didn't like it. He's like, well, I'll buy the rights from Cage's former acting partner from Greece.
Olivia Newton-John?
You know that was, yeah, did you realize that that was Olivia Newton-John singing?
No, I didn't.
Do you guys know that at the end of Greece, the car flies into the sun?
That's also the ending of the movie with the BIM mark.
Oh, yeah, Apple.
The Apple.
And I think it's also the ending of the new Fast and Furious movie.
I can't wait when that comes out.
Yep. F9, it's my favorite function key on my laptop and soon to be my favorite movie of 2021.
Ooh, good one.
Thank you.
Yeah,
very long shootout that is very unsatisfying.
And that's okay, I think you guys are actually right, because I'm thinking about it now, and this is a scene with a million dudes rappelling in trying to shoot one dude, and they can't. And I'm thinking about Hard Boiled, the scene of one dude rappelling into the building, shooting a million dudes, and he hits all of
them.
Oh,
yeah. When he goes into the, it's like a, maybe it's a chop shop or something?
Yeah.
Well, this scene originally was cut differently as well. They have it on the Blu-ray that you can check out from Multnomah County Library. And the alternate cut has it from the kid's perspective. It keeps cutting back to the kid and the kid's reaction shots. As you're hearing the song, he's seeing all this violence around him. And the studio said to Mr. Wu, like, that's probably not acceptable that a kid sees that much violence.
Oh, so they just imply it instead.
Huh. Anyway, very, very unsatisfying action scene, given the setup, the location, and the number of people rappelling with guns. It should be an all-timer, right?
Yeah.
It should be like the centerpiece of the movie.
Yeah.
And it's not very effective, because everybody that's alive at the starting is kind of alive afterwards.
Yeah.
It really has no effect on the story.
Yeah, Cassavetes dies, and a few of the other people die, but another face-off between Cage and Travolta with their back-to-back, and they're going to flip around and shoot each other.
Oh, the mirrors, yes. They are looking at each other, or they're back-to-back against walls, and then when they turn to point their guns, each of them is facing a mirror.
Awesome. So cool. Really badass. Great use of symbolism.
Yeah. Of course, they start shooting, and neither of them get hit. Because why would they?
Yeah.
And then Cage finds Alan, and she doesn't believe him at first, but he touches her face, and she examines blood types, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, there's that really long scene where she goes to the hospital. Maybe it wasn't that long, it just felt like it lasted forever, where she goes, and she's like a scientist, and she tests the blood. And then, literally, like, Jack and Hagar in Game of Thrones, Nicolas Cage steps out of the shadows, and, like, he was there watching her somehow. Really good
stuff.
Well,
he's always at that hospital in L.A.
he ran after the ambulance.
So we forgot to mention Harve Presnell is in this movie, who is the grandpa from Fargo and also sang that beautiful song in Paint Your Wagon.
Wow. Is that true?
Yeah.
Which song?
It's the popular one. The wind
is blowing.
The wind is blowing.
Something like that. That was a good scene.
Got me some gold.
Yeah.
I always think of McDonald's when I see him because of Fargo. What do you think they're doing there at that McDonald's? They're not drinking milkshakes, I assure you. That was a terrible, terrible impersonation. Can you cut that out?
No.
I'm being accosted by our mascot here. So there's a scene in a hospital. Travolta shows up and he's like suspicious, and then she's like, well, I'm a doctor. Or does he call her? Anyway, they all show up at the hospital, Travolta and his gang. And then there's a little Grease musical number, and then there's then the old man Fargo.
That, Jack? You remember the dance musical number
in this movie?
Yeah.
I'm drawing a blank here.
Wait, is this the one I took the edible before I watched?
I don't remember.
Because I'm having a hard... I have my notes here, and I don't remember this, where it's like Harve Presnell, or Old Man Fargo, as I call him, had a funeral, and then there was a confrontation, and then I had weird standoff.
Wait. So what happens, if I remember right, is... Okay, so Travolta's like suspicious, and Joan Allen, his sexy, sexy wife, takes away the... Dr. Joan Allen takes away the sheet, and it's not... Cage that they think he might, it's a fake out. So then we go back to the other B plot, which might be that Archer, evil Archer, wants to take over the world by getting rid of terrorism, or being the only terrorist, or being on first name basis with the president.
Yes.
And his boss comes in. And his boss says something
That's
like,
right, he kills Old Man Fargo.
People are suspicious about all your raids and wasting ammunition. Like the tax dollars aren't being properly spent, whatever the concern is.
Yeah.
And Theta Level 14 or whatever, John Travolta crushes his heart with his mind and has him have like a heart attack.
Okay, now I remember.
And then he waits till he's dead and then calls... the EMT or somebody to come in to save the dead man.
Yeah.
Which will lead to a funeral on a beach, maybe?
And then there's a... And then
in Mexico, right?
So were there close-ups of eyes as they were looking at each other? Because I wrote
There was a standoff.
There's a standoff. Yeah.
Okay. And then I wrote...
Colombian standoff.
I wrote that the results were weird and that they... chase to water in speedboats?
Yes.
Question mark.
Yes.
And then I wrote bad stuntman hair. Was there bad? There was bad stuntman hair at the end of this movie, right? Where it's like Nicolas Cage has a really short haircut, but then when you see the long shots of them on the boat, it's like he has a big wavy.
No, yeah, definitely.
Very bad stuntman.
And speaking of people shooting and never getting shot and wasting ammunition, and that try standoff that turns into like a quintuple. Or maybe more people stand off with the eyes and stuff in the church and the doves and the slow motion. Everyone's shooting at each other and somehow, like, no one gets hit. I feel like bullets in this universe, you get shot and it just makes you, like, fall over.
No, Showgirls gets hit.
Yeah, but I mean, like, no one that matters.
Well, she has a kid.
She has a kid.
Well, yeah, but then...
She's in Showgirls.
The kid... Then, the kid stops hanging out with terrorists and starts hanging out with John Travolta.
Spoilers.
So, come on.
There's a big boat crash after Cage, I think, jumps...
You're forgetting the best part, the knife.
Did I forget that?
Yeah.
Well, tell us about it.
Well, he gives her the knife early on and he says, stab it in the leg and twist. And then he's holding her... hostage at gunpoint, and she stabs him in the leg and twists, and it's like that's a reference to earlier in the story. It's great. And as we know from the Night's Watch recruiter Yoren Blackthorne in Game of Thrones season 2.
Game of Thrones season 2.
Season 2. That actually works. So
there's a crash that Matt miraculously throws him onto a boat ramp, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then how does he kill him?
A boat jumps through another boat. they're on a beach. They're fighting still. They actually cut that scene down some.
Oh my god!
The deleted scenes. It was like an extra 2 or 3 minutes of fight.
Jesus
Christ!
And doesn't he kick John Travolta into like a pole that's sticking out of the wall, right, or something?
No, he has a harpoon gun.
Oh,
he stabs him in the leg, and then he. Yeah, he's going to shoot him, but evil Cage as Travolta starts cutting his face.
Oh, okay, yeah, now I remember. He starts doing self-surgery.
Yeah. Pretty dumb. For a movie that is just this ridiculous and ends with a set piece that turns into a longer chase and then a fight, I think Con Air is so much better.
Yeah, these movies want to be the same kind of movie.
But Con Air just does everything better.
And the end of this movie where Travolta comes home and he's got his face back and then he brings another kid with... I don't know how John Woo casts his child actors, but he says, I want somebody with a really, really terrible haircut.
Yeah.
These little kids with their Muppet hair. Awful.
And that scene is so, like, he comes home and he's like, he has, that's like when you were younger and you'd ask your parents if you could hang out with your friend, but you make sure to bring your friend there so that they can't say no without seeming rude. That's what he's doing. Like, you can't just reject that child to its face, you know?
Wait, did he do that as a kid?
What we're leaving off is that, like, he gets rescued by cops who realize that the face swap has happened somehow, right?
Yes.
Because Joan Allen.
And then they're going to get their top surgeons from the East Coast to come, like, put his face back.
Yeah.
Cool. And then wife Joan Allen, Dr. Joan Allen, doesn't pick him up from the hospital.
Right?
She's just waiting at the house, and he shows up, and he's like, hey, I'm back. She's like, oh, this is great. You're back. And then he reaches kind of out of frame. It's like, I brought something.
Yeah. And another thing is like...
And his fucking daughter does the face wipe thing. And the kid's like, oh, yeah, that's cool. I can't talk.
I'm also traumatized. Whoa.
He puts on headphones.
Yeah.
He just becomes like baby driver. He just is always listening to music from there on out.
Maybe that's the origin of Baby Driver, right? Age.
Truth. Yeah. No, yeah. It doesn't make any sense that this family, especially the kid, the daughter, wouldn't have, like, all this trauma from being held at gunpoint by someone that you think is your dad.
Or Joan Allen having fucked somebody too. Who looked exactly like your husband.
Exactly.
Maybe some different equipment down below, if you know what I mean. How does that affect their marriage?
Yeah.
I mean, don't you think John Travolta's character, seeing as what we've seen, as what a sad sack he is, that he would be thinking about that all the time?
And wouldn't he, like...
Yeah.
Wouldn't they blame him because it was his fault for accepting it in the first place and causing all this chaos and destruction towards their family?
It's kind of his fault. He brought it to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, none of those sound like very action movie things, because I keep thinking of, like, Summersby, right, as well? Where it's like, oh, wait, so what did you guys do? And when did you know? And, yeah, but none of that's action stuff. This is a kick-ass action movie that never lets really off the throttle. If they might have to go to a scene for a minute, like at a hospital, you're like, oh, okay, I'm bored. But it's like a Fast and Furious movie, later ones.
Yeah.
Tokyo Drift later. It's amazing.
I'm gonna disagree with you here. I think that's what it wants to be, but John Woo and the tone from scene to scene is so different from scene to scene. It's like it's a different movie that we're watching, and the action scenes, particularly later in the movie, are just not well staged. They're not well shot. They're not well edited. Considering what he had done before, just a few years earlier with Jean-Claude Van Damme, Hard Target is a much more effective action movie that is just as absurd and has all of the stupid, fake, emotional stuff. But it all of a piece works. And Face Off, it just feels like it's a imitation of something John Woo would do. Like if someone saw a lot of John Woo movies and wanted to make one. Yeah, I think on paper it's great.
Here's one thing. Yeah, I think what you were going for a little bit earlier, saying like it was actually the original ending. Do you know how this originally ended?
No.
So the original ending, there's two scenes that are cut at the end. After the boat scene, somehow Joan Allen and daughter are there, and daughter asks mom, do you think he'll ever be the same? Or do you think he'll ever be dad again? And then you get maybe him bringing the kid home, maybe not. But the final scene is John Woo has the trick from Peggy Sue Got Married with the fake mirror.
Uh-huh.
And Joan Allen goes in the bathroom, and the trophy, washing your face, Travolta looks up and it's Cage looking back, and she also sees it. And then it cuts back, and he's back to himself, and he goes and he hugs her, but he doesn't quite look right in the face. And there's like a freeze frame on it, and I'm assuming that's where the credits were rolled up. Huh. And so it's going to be a little bit more like, mild spoiler alert, I won't say which movie this is of Woo's, but you spend your whole life trying to like get eyes, or like your whole mission is to get eyes for somebody you blinded earlier in the film, and then you lose your ability, like you get your eyes damaged, right? Like it's this horrible, it's a lot more tragic and moody of an ending.
So the movie you're referring to is Outlaw Josie Wales?
Yes.
Huh, that is, if the action scenes, for me personally, mileage varies obviously, but it after that first one, which is just fantastic, as the movie goes along, it seems like they get worse and less effective. Con Air, on the other hand, does the classic escalation thing, and it's completely effective.
Yeah, for sure.
But Cage, this is a Cage podcast. Amazing performance, despite the fact that I don't like the movie. I think this is one of my favorite performances of his.
I completely agree. I think that the second half of the movie is definitely better. I think there are some highlights, but it just... Honestly, it doesn't take the concept far enough. I would have gone further.
Yeah, they didn't lean into the absurdity quite as much as they could have, as opposed to the other movie we watched.
I wanted more scenes with Cage and the terrorists, with him, yeah, doing the thing like you said, where he's like, no thanks, I don't want a bowl of chili right now. And they're like, chili is your favorite food. Like, you know. I think I actually got that from, I think I stole that from, what's that one with that, Lindsay Lohan? She was a little kid.
Freaky Friday?
Parent Trap?
Freaky Friday?
No.
Parent Trap.
Parent Trap.
Okay.
It's like a Disney movie?
Yeah, so is Parent. Well, they both are.
Are they?
Yeah, they're both remakes.
Really?
Yeah, Freaky Friday is one where she and Jamie Lee Curtis switch brains.
Okay. Well, in one of them, someone, chili is their favorite food. So
true story, speaking of Freaky Friday, for a year or so, I worked with a guy who is schizophrenic, and one of his favorite movies and who he is obsessed with, Freaky Friday, Lindsay Lohan, watched it all the time. That's the only reason I know. I had to watch it like 10 or 12 times over the course of one summer.
And now it's your favorite movie too?
And I'm obsessed with Lindsay Lohan.
Yep.
Yeah. Who? Yeah. No, I'm not. Anyway, are we done? Do we have Google reviews?
Oh yeah, there's some Google reviews for Face/Off.
I just wanted to... So Cage, after Face/Off, says, I'll be done with action for a while. I feel like I've really done it. I've done every kind of genre of movie making that I can imagine. I've done the underground art film, I've done dramatic movies, I've done comedies, and now I've done action. I just want to have as many different careers within one career as I could possibly have and hope to keep doing this to the end.
That's a great quote.
That sounds like a great coda for like the 90s. Unfortunately, we still have the aughts and the teens to talk about.
Yeah, and I think that him saying many different careers is one of the things watching these films from different eras that has occurred to probably all of us, is that he has had these distinct eras and... wanting to have a few extra movies from this current era is the reason why I asked you guys at the starting of the episode to pick movie.
Okay, Google reviews. Gail Van Meter gives it 1 star and says, is that how Sun got the idea to wear mask? Where is done of his security detail from his movies? Any other mask his son have? Where did he get the money for this one?
What?
I agree.
It's hard to argue with.
Ninja Blade 2003 says, true mind blowing the way Cage and Travolta, when they change faces, is the best thing to happen. Norby Bridges gives it 1 star. Too much stooped. Bring something to do so it's not a complete waste of time. Zan Vogue gives it 5 stars. Yes! Nicolas Cage tries to act like Travolta. And Travolta tries to act like Nicolas Cage. I needed this in my life. Andrew Jean.
What in his life made him need it?
Yeah, he should consider going to the Church of Scientology if he needs fulfillment.
Where you were raised.
Yeah. Andrew Jean Tio Logo gives it 5 stars. Extraordinary. The technology used in the scene where they switch faces. It could probably happen in the future.
Yeah, did you guys see the results of that actual face transplant 5 or 6 years ago?
No.
We got a ways to go.
Okay.
Is that the guy who has face thrown off by a shark?
I don't know how the face was all messed up, but the transplant itself was definitely looked better. Did not look like Nicolas Cage or John Travolta.
Right.
Which, for one of those, that's not that. I mean, yeah, it has a long way to go.
Keon Miller says, "I love how they metaphorically and physically faced off. Lol, good show, old chap."
Who's the old chap?
Us.
Okay.
Wyatt Brown, extremely unrealistic and extremely sucky movie. Overall, my favorite movie ever. A character from the film actually commented.
What?
Adopted child. It's so insane that it's damn amazing. Kenny C, Nick Cage with big fat mustache in the opening scenes equals Academy Award.
Agreed.
And hashtag my toy collection says masterpiece. I bet they have the action figures from the film.
I bet they do. Do they have, face-off action figures? With the...
You could pull the face off?
Yeah, like the old school. Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Have you guys decided on whether or not you want to pick a teen Cage or a Cage movie from the teens? Not a movie when Cage was a teen. For the next episode, Jack, you said you had one right away.
I do.
What is it? Is it the Paul Schrader?
The Paul Schrader? Wait, what?
He made a movie with Paul Schrader.
Oh, and another actor was in it, like Willem Dafoe or something, right?
I don't know.
Like another...
Thomas, do you have one?
I'm missing my superhero films, so I would like to see the second Ghost Rider, which I haven't seen before, and revisit Kick-Ass.
Okay. I'm just going to quickly look and make sure that there aren't any...
Okay, well, Jack is looking. We'd like to thank our sponsors. Ivanov's 24-Hour Bail Bonds and Vegan Cake Pops in Longview, Washington. Great supporter of the podcast. We're very happy that your daughter reached the finals of American Idol. It's too bad that she didn't win. Have you found anything yet?
Well, there are some that I really want to do, like Drive Angry and Season of the Witch, which are technically the teens almost, or like the Frozen Ground, because that's another Cage.
Oh, Cusack.
Cusack. But I think the one that I'm going to pick, because it is way more recent, and I know you and I both like it, but Thomas doesn't.
Ooh.
Color Out of Space. I want to revisit that.
Okay. And what is yours, Thomas? Ghost Rider or Kick-Ass?
Oh, are we only getting one? Do I get to pick one and
Jack gets one. That's the Cage match. It's going to be your pick against Jack's.
Yeah, so my two were Ghost Rider 2 and Kick-Ass.
Wait, I'm confused. How are we doing this?
Well, Thomas gets to pick one, you get to pick one.
Wait, so, okay, we are only picking.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Huh. If you do Flip Color Out of Space, I want the Ghost Rider movie.
Okay.
Oh, that's going to be amazing pairing.
Sweet.
Ghost Rider 2, Color Out of Space. Is that the last movie we saw before Quiet Place 2? That's the last movie I saw in the theater.
I saw Sonic the Hedgehog and Little Women after that.
Well, aren't you a fucking dandy?
Those two, great pairing. Both okay. Very feminist.
What's our recording schedule going to be, Thomas? Do you want to talk about that on air or afterwards?
Sure, no, I'll go ahead. I can go ahead and mention that we're going to be taking a small break while we get a new studio and a dog sitter. And I'm also traveling to Belarus. I watched Come and See this weekend, and I really want to buy myself a lemur. So maybe while I'm there, I'll see if we can get some billboards in the area.
Okay.
If I get travel a little bit closer to the Baltic, I might, go to our unofficial sponsor, the country of Slovenia. We will be... We will be back is the takeaway.
Yes.
Okay.
Safe travels.
In the meantime, we have social media that you should go to. Oh.
The good, the palm, the ugly.
Did you guys get a Kaufman on this one?
Oh, shit,
We did not. I mean, these movies are almost Kaufman-proof because they both
They're both kind of the model for the Kaufman movie.
They both seem like they already have been Kaufman.
Maybe you said that the scenes were cut down at the end of Face Off. Maybe Kaufman would have extended it another 15 or 20 minutes, the chase.
Well, Kaufman would have probably introduced somebody showing, like Joan Allen showing up, and then it actually turning out to be Showgirls, Gina Gershon.
Yeah.
And they would have extended the motif of face swapping beyond the two main actors.
Right.
That's all I got.
That would have been great.
Thomas, I reckon you have something.
Well, I mean, yeah, I tried. I didn't have anything great. I had, like, for Con Air, like, another plane lands and Jared Leto gets out. Like, and there's some wet paint on the side of the plane and it says, like, Revlon instead of Con Air. Or, like, he's giving his daughter the bunny at the end. All of a sudden, this motorcycle bounty hunter drives up and, like, either shoots the bunny or throws a hand grenade at it.
Racing Arizona.
That will be in an upcoming episode. Or like he pulls like some prison hooch out of the like it's like in a bag out of the rabbit and starts drinking it under the Vegas lights, and you realize that he's talking, but there's nobody else around him, and like these two prostitutes walk by and you know kind of check him out, and one of them says like, "I gotta get me some of that." But I was thinking more like Face Off. It would be pretty cool if like we keep going with the ending. So like the kid comes in, the daughter gives him the face waterfall, and like you cut to like they're in the kitchen, and the daughter opens the fridge and she's like, "What would you like? You know, we got some OJ, some purple stuff." And the kid just kind of like shakes his head, and she looks around. She goes, "Well, maybe some fruit." And he shows a little bit of interest, and she goes, "Well, how about this?" And the kid speaks, and it's Troy's voice, and it says, "A peach. I could eat a peach for hours."
Did you say they had purple drink in the refrigerator?
Well, isn't that what the Sunny D commercial is? Like, you got some OJ, some purple stuff, some Sunny D. Sunny D!
Very good.
Amazing.
Yeah. But we definitely need to thank the Howling Fantods for the theme song.
Amazing theme song.
Great theme song.
The only reason that I wanted to add an extra episode is just so we could
listen to that.
Another episode with their theme song.
For sure. Great. It's great.
Yeah. Baker's Dozen may extend a bit more. Who knows? So we have to figure out what we're going to do next. So.
Yeah, tune in on the social medias. Great segue. Creds to me. Get the Pod and the Ugly on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. And you can listen to this podcast on all podcasting platforms and wherever you are listening to it right now in that Slovenian bunker after World War III. Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Push up.
Me and Penny made it out of the World Trade, and I saw the colors out of space. Time in Bulgaria, acting my way out of bankruptcy. But now millennials say they love me.